You're listening to Atheistically Speaking.
Hello and welcome to episode 92 of Atheistically Speaking. I'm your host, Thomas Smith. Today, I am continuing the interview with Bobby C., former police officer Bobby C. of No Religion Required. But first, I'd like to take a minute to just thank whoever it was, the kind person who left the latest iTunes review. It's a little pathetic that I have... I can isolate like one person who left an iTunes review, but it really helps the show. So, I'd appreciate it if you have an extra minute to just go on iTunes, write a quick review, rate it 5 stars, It's not much, especially if you're, you don't have the funds to be a patron. I understand. This is a way you can help and we all win. So the most recent review... great podcast and very neutral. That's probably, I don't know if they're, inside joke or if that's just their honest, what their opinion was. I love Atheistically Speaking mostly because Thomas is most like myself. He tries to be very neutral, but at times struggles trying to find what side of an issue he lies on, all while noticing his own biases. Great thinker. Keep it up. Thank you. That's really nice. If you have a minute, write a review. It helps me out. Okay, now let's go ahead and get to the remainder of the interview with Bobby C., and then we're going to have a nice little Patron of the Week segment.
But it is still the officer's obligation to handle the situation the best way that he knows how, that he thinks is the best way to do it.
Right.
Me personally, I don't think killing the man was the right way to go. Now, there's going to be people listening that are officers that are going to disagree, and there's some that are going to agree. If you disagree, send me an email, noreligionrequired@gmail.com. And trust me, I'll read them. But my question is, why didn't officer? I would have questions for the department. Why weren't their cameras on the officer? Why isn't there dash cameras? Where's the mic on the officer that he should have on him that he can flip a switch and he's live? Why wasn't he trained with a taser? I got shot by a taser to carry mine.
Right.
A taser is non-lethal. Had he had a taser, he could have gotten Brown off of him from the car, and Brown would have faced the charges that he had coming. And if people are wondering what the charges that he probably had coming, I can tell you just from looking at what the situation was. First of all, he's going to have disorderly conduct because of the derogative statement that he supposedly made to the officer while he was standing in the road. Then he's going to have obstruction because he wouldn't allow the officer to open up the car door. Thirdly, he's got assault on a police officer. That's a felony. But at least he'll be alive to face those charges.
Sure.
A taser is a wonderful thing because it's non-lethal and the guy lives to tell the story. Why didn't these officers have these tools that possibly would have changed this entire situation?
Yeah, he didn't carry one, right? He preferred not to carry one, yeah.
A taser is a wonderful thing. I told you I'm 6 foot tall. The first guy I tased with my taser was 6'5" and over 300 pounds. I hit him once with my taser, and he hit the ground. And the guy said, "Give me the cuffs. I'll cuff myself. Just don't shoot me with that thing again."
So he was resistant for a little while, and then he hit him with the taser, and he was fine.
Yeah, you hit him with a taser. All of a sudden, he's like, "Dude, just don't do that again."
Wow.
That right there is non-lethal, and I didn't have to shoot the guy.
Yeah.
So where are those tools? Why didn't the department have those tools available to the officers? Let me tell you, cameras on officers are a brilliant idea.
Yeah. I still think that's a good idea, despite this New York City one. I still think it's got to be, overall, it's got to be a hugely positive thing.
Well, what it does is it takes away any doubt of probable cause.
Now, you, I'm guessing you didn't have a personal camera, being as it was a while ago, and the technology, I think, is a bit easier now than it was then. Did you have a dashboard cam, though?
Yes. I had a dashboard cam on my car called an Eagle Eye. And every time you activate your lights on your car, the camera came on. I also had a mic that I kept inside the lapel of my shirt and a box. All I had to do was flip a switch, and the mic on my person was hot and recording. When I turned on my mic, the camera came on. I didn't have a personal camera like the officers here are getting soon, but I had a camera on my dash that recorded everything, and the audio recorded everything that I said to that person and that person said to me. There are many times that camera saved my backside in a courtroom because I tell the judge, Your Honor, I have the video. Guess what? You can argue all you want to, but if you have video footage from the dash cam of a police car, that's going to tell the truth because you hear every word said.
Yeah, and that was what I was going to ask you. Did that make you – it sounds like it made you more comfortable. I mean, it sounds like you preferred to have that. Do you think that's going to be the prevalent feeling among officers, or do you have any experience with officers who dislike it?
I'm pretty sure there are some officers out there that dislike it. Me personally, I think a camera being on an officer serves two purposes. First of all, it takes away probable cause. You see everything that officer sees when he deals with a situation. But the second does is it makes that officer maintain a certain standard. And what I mean by that is you can't go up and sucker punch somebody because now it's on camera.
You're right. Yeah.
So it's going to make that officer maintain a certain standard and a certain level of professionalism because Big Brother is watching.
And you have to think that any good cop would want that, right? I mean, it might just be cops. Some of those cops you were talking about earlier with a chip on their shoulder would be the kind that wouldn't want it. But I don't want those people to be cops. So,
right. But a true blue officer, trust me, cops are cops because they love it. They're not in it for money. The reason I left was because I got tired of working security and police work just to pay my mortgage. I love the job. But police officers are police officers because they love what they do. Trust me, it's not for the money. And for those officers that love what they do, that have a genuine respect for the public and understand that they are there to actually serve the public, regardless of what color their skin is and regardless of what they look like or where they live. If you can get past those things and stop looking at the color of someone's skin and then determining whether or not, because of the color of their skin, they're guilty. That drove me crazy because there were many times within the department that I worked that we were told that if you see a black guy walking down the street at midnight, make sure you stop and talk to him. He's up to something. Wow. But don't mess with the white guy walking down the street at midnight. Come on.
So it was that explicit in your
very. Very much so. Very much. Well, wow. I was on a crime suppression unit, and we went into all the neighborhoods that no other officer really wanted to go into. We worked on no-knock warrants. We dealt with narcotics. We dealt with gangs. We dealt with the bad guys, the really, really bad guys. And unfortunately, a majority of them were black. But you don't judge them strictly by the color of their skin or whether or not they have gold front teeth and dreadlocks because some of the greatest guys that I ever knew on the street that were some of my best informants that would come up and go, hey, Officer Bobby, I don't know if you know, but this is going on over there, right? They had long dreadlocks, gold teeth, sagging pants, you know, and you would think that these were the biggest drug dealers on the planet, and they were some of the nicest guys you'd ever want to come in contact with. So for me to sit back and judge you according to the color of your skin would make an ass out of me.
Wow.
And I wasn't going to put up with it. I wasn't going to drive by a white guy to talk to the black guy. If you're a white guy walking down the street at midnight, yeah, I'm going to introduce myself to you. What's going on? Why are you walking down the street at midnight? Where are you going? Do you have ID? I want to know these things, especially if it's a neighborhood that has a rash of robberies.
Doesn't it seem like, to reinforce what you said earlier, doesn't it seem like the attitude is so much of that? I mean, like you just said there, like introduce yourself. I mean, if you go in with that attitude of just, how's it going? What are you up to? it seems like it would diffuse things so much better than, hey, fucker, you know, like just any sort of violent, you know, aggressive tone. It just seems like a no-brainer to me, but maybe people are looking for fights. I don't know.
Well, there were many times when you're out there by yourself, Thomas, okay, and it's 2:30 in the morning, you're the only one in the car. Your backup is in the other side of the county, right? And you're about to approach someone. First of all, you don't know who they are. You don't know what they have on them. You don't know what their intentions are. How are you going to handle it? Do you get out your car? Hey, you son of a bitch, get on the ground, right? Or do you walk up and go, hey, how you doing, sir? I'm Officer so-and-so with such-and-such police department. How you doing tonight? You are not aggressive. Even in your stance, you make sure that your stance is not aggressive. You don't get out the car with your hand on your gun like you're ready to go.
Right.
You know, you get out of the car and you're ready. Trust me, if he does anything, you're ready. But you're not presenting yourself in such a way that you automatically put him on the defensive, especially when you're by yourself.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, that's what I would think. But you're the one with the experience. What percentage of officers do you think are that way? Just anecdotally.
Like I was, or we get out the car, get on the goddamn ground.
Yeah, right. Both.
Both. I think a majority of them think like I think.
Okay.
They want to go home to their family at the end of their shift. And they're going to do everything they can to make sure that they get home safely. And if they can get home safely without harming anybody, without taking anyone's life, that's a good night. Then you have those officers that, yeah, they're high strung, man. They're gung ho, want to get up there and get them. They want to get all the bad guys. They're the bad guys. We're the good guys. You better listen to me, damn it. You have a majority of those too. But I think when you're dealing with someone that you don't know, the best way to approach them is non-aggressive, but authoritative.
Sure.
Yes, they know. Sure. They know you're the police. They know you're the police. You pulled up in a patrol car with blue lights. You're wearing a badge and a gun. They know who you are. But it depends on how you approach them. Many times, I have been sitting on side of the road, not sitting, but standing on the side of the road with someone talking to them, and have another aggressive officer walk up. And instantly, the mood of the person I was talking with changed. And next thing you know, I had to put my hands on the man, and I didn't have a problem with him until the other officer got there.
Yeah.
Because the officer was the aggressor.
Well, that definitely sounds like it's a significant problem. I mean, if that happened to you more than once.
Well, it is a problem, but it's a problem that the departments have to keep an eye out for and rectify it.
Yeah.
Because, guys, there are good officers out there that love their job and love people, and they love what they do. They're out there. Don't let a bad officer, or what people call a dirty cop, don't let a dirty cop ruin your perception of the entire law enforcement community, because not all of them are like that. Sure, they would do their job. Trust me, they would do their job, and they are prepared to do it, and most of them do it well. But if you never put them in a situation to make them, quote unquote, do their job, they don't want to shoot anybody. That's not what it's all about. When they say protect and serve, that is truly the thing that they mean. They are to serve the community. And the community makes up of many different types of people, many different colors of people, many different sexual orientations, many different people out there that you are serving. And you have to keep that in your mind. Who am I serving, and why am I here? What is my job? My job is to catch the bad guys when they're doing something wrong and protect the innocent. That is my job.
Well, I couldn't agree more, but I can't help but feel like you've got to be somewhat in a minority in your outlook. I mean, maybe not minority, but I don't know. It seems like that would
rare.
And that might be the problem. I mean, there might be a real problem in the culture of police officers, because that if everyone had that point of view, I mean, it seems like we would live in a vastly different world. That's a great point of view. I think that everyone would have a lot more respect for every officer if that were how it is. I don't know. Now, we touched on it. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was saying I agree with you.
Okay. We touched on it a little bit, but I was going to ask you more directly. what do you see, how do you see race playing into the specifically the altercation from your point of view as an ex-officer? How do you see race playing into that?
Into the Michael Brown case?
Yes, into the Michael Brown case. Is there anything specifically that you see? Because it's hard. I mean, it's hard to know, you know, for certainty. We can definitely assume and based on lots of other things going on and just numbers, but, you know, we can assume that racism is definitely a problem. What do you see in that specific, in the details of that case? Do you see anything there?
I'm trying to think. Because I'm looking at the details of the case. The guys were walking down the middle of the road. I've come across that hundreds of times. You know, people walking down the middle of the road going home. There's not much traffic. They're just walking out in the road. And many times I've pulled up beside them. Hey, guys, do me a favor. If you don't mind, kind of get on the sidewalk. I really hate to see you get hit by a car. If you present it that way, most of the time they're like, yes, sir, I feel you. And they'll get on the sidewalk. The testimony given by Mr. Johnson said that Officer Wilson pulled up and basically hit them with a bunch of explicit language and said, get your ass on the sidewalk. Well, of course, that's not exactly the best way to present yourself to these guys walking down the road. You know, so if it is true that the officer did that, like I said, I don't know.
Yeah,
I wouldn't think. But if we go by the testimony, if the officer did that, no wonder the two guys in the middle of the road, next thing you know, they're offensive. You know, who the fuck are you talking to? You know, and I can understand that aspect. Do I think that he did it just because they were black? I don't know. Now, of course, they have the bolo that comes out, beyond lookout, right? A bolo. They have a bolo comes out and they give a description of a man wearing bright yellow socks, you know, white T-shirt, wet red hat. He just stole, you know, cigarillos or
cigars.
Yeah. From the store, be on the lookout for this person. Now, here you are, you're facing somebody, bright yellow socks, red hat, and they fit the description, right? At that point, I don't think it has a damn thing to do with race. This guy matches the description of the person that did that, whether it was a white guy or a black guy.
However, that's part I'm confused on, because if that's what – that clearly wasn't why he stopped him. He stopped him because they were in the middle of the road.
Walking in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
From what I can understand, he didn't even know about it yet.
Right.
If I'm right, and I may be wrong, and if I'm wrong, I don't mind being corrected, but if I'm right, he didn't find out that that was the guy until after the altercation.
Yeah, I've heard two different things. I've heard the chief said something, and then later in the testimony, the story was that he did realize it was the suspect at some point. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to believe with that. You know, I can see being cynical about that. I also... You know, it's like, I don't know what to do. You know, when you hear the testimony and all that,
right.
What do you, you know, I don't know how, for me personally, how do I evaluate that? I just don't know. Like you said, I wasn't there,
but I wasn't there,
but I can certainly see, I could see race being a factor in how he initially approached them. Well,
and you have to look at the surroundings. Where are they at? Are they in a low income area? Predominantly black. He's a white officer in there, so automatically he's the bad guy in most people's eyes. You know, he's a white officer riding through the hood, right? So when you go into that neighborhood, you are looking for a specific type of person doing a specific type of crime. Hmm. Does race have something to do with it then? Absolutely, because that's the surrounding you're in. You're not going to ride through a place that has million-dollar homes looking for someone that has dreadlocks, gold teeth. Not when there are million-dollar homes around. You're expecting to see upper class, well-groomed, you know, that type of person. You have to look at the surrounding. Was he in a hood? Probably. And what was he looking for? Well, if you're in that type of situation, you're looking for a certain type of person. I think the environment plays a big part in it. For me to say that the officer was a racist and that's why he did it, I can't say that. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, sure. I mean, I was just very interested in your take as someone who definitely can look at it with a different eye than I can.
Okay.
So, let's see. Is there anything else we should cover, or we're about out of time?
We've been about an hour now.
Yeah. That's been great.
The time goes fast when you're having fun.
Well, and I do have to just compliment your tremendous radio voice. It's easy to listen to. I encourage people to check out your podcast, No Religion Required. Yes. Now, is it a weekly?
Oh, yes. We put out an episode every Sunday.
Every Sunday. Okay.
Yeah. Every single Sunday we put out an episode. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spreaker. And if they don't want to download, they can go over to NoReligionRequired.com and they can listen to the episode there. They can also find us on Facebook at No Religion REQ. They wouldn't let us use the word required, so we had to say REQ. Huh. And we have the same handle on Twitter, No Religion REQ. Get in contact with us, man.
To go along with that, when I post this episode, I'll link it to the accounts and then people can find it there.
Awesome.
Too.
Thank you. And by all means, if there's anyone listening and you disagree with anything I've said, I'm perfectly cool with you disagreeing. Send me an email. I don't mind talking about it. I'm always willing to learn, and I'm always willing to change my mind if I'm proven wrong. So if you disagree, send an email to noreligionrequired@gmail.com. I'll be more than happy to discuss anything with anyone. And send me your comments, complaints, gripes, bitches. Hey, I don't mind.
Okay, Bobby C., No Religion Required. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you.
Well, the pleasure's been absolutely mine. Thank you very much for allowing me to come on and at least share my perspective from a law enforcement view.
Absolutely. It's been very enlightening. I'll talk to you soon.
I look forward to it, my friend.
Joining me this week for the Patreon of the Week questionnaire is Doug. How are you doing, Doug?
I'm good. How are you, Tom?
Pretty good. So we're going to talk about some interesting stuff, but I'll just start off with the standard questions and then let me know. We can branch off a little bit because you got some interesting things about you that are worth talking about. So,
I hope so.
Thanks so much for joining me.
Well, I was wondering what happens the first interview you have with a Patreon that's not interesting.
Oh, then they're canceled, and then I refund their money and just kindly ask them to leave.
That makes sense.
So you'll notice one Patreon fewer. No, I'm just kidding. Have you always been an atheist, or did you convert or lose your faith or whatever you want to call it?
I have always been an atheist. I've explored and studied pretty much every religion along the way at some point or another. It all started with a deacon's daughter back in high school. Mm. And the King James Bible, and then two other versions. Are you still working through the Bible on T&B?
Still going.
Okay, well, I've read probably 2.5. The third one I just kind of skimmed. So, it's
how'd
painful,
you get it? But, how'd you get through it that many times?
Well, it's curious because really I'm just kind of fascinated with what people believe and why they believe it. That's kind of how I got into listening to so many podcasts and yours, et cetera. It's how I discovered you, in fact. But really what it comes down to is I'm really interested in finding all these little detailed differences between, the various versions and why people believe when there's so much variation and all that kind of stuff. I don't even know how to voice it exactly. Except
yeah.
It's fascinating to me.
Okay. What's the answer? Why do people still believe it? I don't know.
I have no idea. not only am I interested in the religions, but also a variety of other psychology issues. I'm in sales. I deal with how people think all the time. So it's a really fascinating study to me.
So the question, next question, standard question is not going to work, is what led to your atheism. But I guess I can ask, were you raised atheist?
That's a good point. My parents were basically atheists. My father's definitely atheist. My mother was sort of spiritual, came from a vaguely religious family, and they just didn't raise me with anything in particular. But along the way, of course, you can't grow up in this country without running into plenty of religion. And it started with girls for me. And then my friends started, getting reborn and all this kind of stuff. So for me, it was, what in the heck is going on around me? And I've looked into all of them at this point, at least everyone I've ever run into. I've read about it, studied it. Just nothing ever stuck. To be blunt, I just have no faith. It's
Yeah.
And to me, it's interesting how people believe this stuff, but I just can't, it doesn't click for me. You know, I'm like, I'd like to think that this stuff was, could be true. Some of it anyway, but
no, I know what you mean. It's just, if it's not there, it's not there. I don't know. Yeah. It's, you kind of have to be raised into it. What'd you say?
You can't make yourself believe.
No. Yeah, I agree. It's funny. So do you have any, well, let's see if these questions will yield any fruit. I don't know. But is there ever any tension in your family? Do you have any religious family members or anything that where it comes up?
Yeah, sure. I mean, my immediate family wasn't religious, but I've been unfriended by a few cousins on Facebook, for instance. You know, I can remember back when there were a few school shootings and people would post something stupid about, you know, this is what happens when you don't let God into schools. and stuff like that. Yeah. And of course, I can't resist commenting. And, the Pledge of Allegiance thing where, you know, we got to keep God in schools and, you know, we got to make sure that all the schools say the Pledge of Allegiance. And I would get into various arguments on Facebook about how the, making my kids say a God in the pledge is like making their kids say under no gods or without God or something like that.
Yeah, or one thing I've come across is like, oh, yeah, sure, let's get God back in school. So we're all going to pray to Allah, right? Is that the God? Oh, what? Yeah. You had a different God in mind? Oh, well, we're going to go with this God. How do we pick a God to keep in school? I don't know how that works.
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. There's just no way that can work out in this society at this point. We are on an inevitable move towards secularism, I think, in this country. There's no way we can go backward at this point. We're going to make bits and starts at it, and there'll be a lot of hand-waving along the way, but there's just no way we can go backward, I don't think.
Well, I hope you're right. Yeah, it comes from just an assumption that your religion is like the religion, you know, just an unquestioned kind of background assumption. When you say, oh, let's get God in schools. Oh, yeah, sure. Which one? Jehovah? Wait a minute.
Well, and more importantly, when they're talking about getting God in school, what exactly do they mean? You know, And how do they want that to play out? And when you start asking them about it, they get all upset about it. And why are you questioning my faith and stuff like that? So, you know, I lost some cousins on Facebook. More
who
than
needs
that,
cousins?
Not really. Yeah. Well, you know, when it comes right down to it, these are more distant members of the family. And I'm like, okay, fine. You know, maybe I'll see you at some family event somewhere in the future. But whoop-de-doo, you know, I don't need to be friends with everybody on Facebook.
So are you married? Have kids?
I do. I am married. I have two boys. And
Is your wife atheist as well?
She is. She wasn't always. In fact, she went to Catholic school, although she was not a Catholic, which actually helped lead to her atheism in the long run because she was excluded from a number of things and that didn't feel right. When she got together with me, I remember the conversation started with, well, yeah, obviously this wasn't right when we got together, but eventually it was, well, how will we raise the children? And I said, she wanted to take them to church. And I said, well, all right, but I get to teach them the history of the world. And her response was something like, well, what do you mean? So we kind of went down that road together. And, you know, my attitude towards how religion had affected history and culture, et cetera. And pretty much before you knew it, she had pretty much lost any remaining faith she'd had. Wow. I wasn't really meaning for that to happen per se. I was just kind of
you're like the world's best lecturer, apparently. You're just like, I have a 10 course. Yeah.
Probably had some ulterior motivation there.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah.
The relationship was going pretty well.
Yeah. Your 10 step lesson plan to know God. So has there ever been a time when atheism has conflicted with something in your professional life?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's funny because the story I'll tell is what made me learn to shut the heck up. And this is why I don't use my real name in this conversation. I'm in a highly regulated industry, big corporate America.
Oh, and I just wanted to point out, if lest people go and look for you on Patreon, we're just going by Doug. Your name, you're probably not going to be able to find who this is, but trust me that it's a patron. This could just be my friend Doug that I know, but no, it's a patron.
I can't use my real name. I can't really talk about, you know, what I really think at work. A few people at work know, but that's, you know, I wait until I figure out what they think first. And I'm like, oh yeah, we're on the same page there.
Right.
Years ago, I was in a different industry actually, but not dissimilar. And we were at, you know, these conferences and conventions and stuff like that. And when you're an exhibitor at conventions and you're in the same industry, you see the same exhibitors show after show after show, and you end up hanging out and drinking beers and you get to know these guys pretty well. And one of them in particular, I thought I'd struck up a great friendship with, et cetera. And, mentioned that, at this time in my life, I was meeting with some friends that were atheists, and just, you know, like once a month or once every 2 weeks or so, we'd get together and, you know, kind of have our own little atheist support group, just sharing our stories and stuff like that. Mm. Nothing serious, just, you know, drink a beer and, you know, lament our position in the country. This was so 15 years ago, so it was a little different. I think things are getting better every year.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, this guy got it in his head that I was, I don't know how exactly he got it in his head this way, but he got it in his head that I was out there converting people. I'm like, no. But then he went back.
Not counting your wife.
Back and told my boss. Yeah, not counting my wife. He went back and told my boss, my boss's boss, who was the CEO of the company, very flat.
Wow.
And a Mormon.
Uh-oh.
What he thought I was up to.
So he thought you were almost using kind of company time to convert people even, right? Or
I don't know that that was exactly it. And no, I don't think it really mattered. In the end, what happened was my boss came to me and said, hey, so is this what's happening? Is this what you're doing? No. And he says, well, that's good. And I'm thinking to myself, holy crap. You know, here's my Christian boss and my Mormon CEO that know about this. And I'm like, I need to learn to keep my mouth shut. Because if there had been any less understanding, they wouldn't have bothered coming to me. They would have just found a way to fire me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
And so I thought, you know, it's not worth my income. It's just not worth my income. So
it's rough when it's your livelihood, you know, you can't really mess around with that. And it's, so did you say you no longer work there or?
I no longer work at that company, but I'm still in an industry, a big corporate America circumstance where I've just learned to keep my mouth shut at work.
The atheism have anything to do with leaving, or was it just a normal career thing?
No. Okay. That was more economy and the shift in the industry.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. crisis averted, but yeah, that's definitely awkward. That must have been no fun.
I'm actually pretty out at this point, everywhere except when I'm at work. You know, if anybody at work came to me and said, so we figured out you're an atheist, I'd be like, well, that's not for my lack of trying to hide it from you. So you must be looking. So do we need to have our lawyers talk? You know, because that's the level I'm at this point is where I'm out. And if anybody has a problem with it, I've been very professional about it. So I don't think they can deal with that.
Hmm.
I am worried at some point that my name, my family name might hit the news if I ever have to get into it with the school. But so far, the school system here has been really cool. I know I mentioned to you in IM earlier that my son is sitting out the pledge. It's the American Humanist Association. Don't stand for the pledge bit.
Oh, I haven't even heard of this. Can you talk about it?
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just a movement the American Humanist Association is working on. And I heard about it on a podcast somewhere along the way. And the idea is that you're not supposed to stand for the pledge, which makes it pretty obvious that something's going on and people ask and you say, yeah, I want God removed from the pledge. I think this might be a bit of a pipe dream, but it's still at the same time, at least for the near term, I don't think that's going to change. But still at the same time, I think it's a great idea because it gets people talking, and people talking will lead to people questioning, you know, along the way. And hopefully we'll end up with more humanists, more secularists, more secular society. But I was watching a video on this on my computer in my bedroom about how this is going. You can see it on the American Humanist Association website. And my son, my 13-year-old son, walks in and he's looking over my shoulder and he's very steadfast in his disbelief as well. You know, he's just come along. Was funny because when he came in and asked me about the tooth fairy when he was, I don't know, 7 or 8, he says, Dad, how come you know, the other kids at school are getting $5 a tooth and I'm only getting a buck a tooth. Rather than saying, well, that's because their parents aren't. I said, well, what do you think? And he said, I think it's because you and mommy are the tooth fairy. And I said, I think you're very smart.
It's like, I can smell the cheapness all over it.
And he says, well, what about the Easter bunny? And I said, what do you think?
He's like, I noticed my candy is pretty cheap as well. Maybe there's a pattern here.
He says, I think you and mommy are the Easter bunny too. And I said, I think you're very smart. And he says, so Santa Claus? And I said, you know what I'm going to say, right? He's like, you're going to ask me what I think. And I'm going to tell you, I think you and mommy are Santa Claus. And I said, yeah, I think you're very smart. And he says, what about God? And I said, well, that's a tougher issue because there isn't any proof either way, because I can tell you I am not God. But
yeah,
I think you're very smart.
So mom's God.
Yeah. So anyway, watching this video over my shoulder, and I had this long conversation with him about how what was going on and what this meant and why people were doing this. And I said, you know, honestly, you're 13 years old, you're in middle school. I'm not sure this is something for you yet. Just keep in mind that this could have, you know, social ramifications. I don't know what your teachers think. You know, this is not something that I would encourage you to do at your age. And he nodded and, okay, fine. A week later, he told me he'd been sitting down all week. And I'm like, oh my God.
I was going to ask, actually. I was going to ask, like, if you worried about the consequences for yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he has way more balls than I do. I could not have done that at his age. There's no way. I can't tell you how proud I am of him. I am a little worried at some point he might decide he wants to stop and then feel stuck. And I need to have that conversation with him about, you can stop this anytime and nobody's going to look sideways at you. But it takes an incredible amount of guts. He went in, he had fallout from his friends who were Christians, who, you know, gave him a hard time about it. He stood up for himself and made it through. He's still friends with all of them. You know, then he had fallout from a substitute teacher. And then apparently what we call homeroom for our generation. He says his homeroom teacher hadn't really noticed he was sitting down. And then when she noticed, she called him up and asked him about it. And he explained what he was doing. And she said, well, you know, we asked the foreign students to stand and just to be respectful. And he said, no, I'm not going to do that. The balls on this kid. It's incredible. Yeah. So anyway, I took it upon myself at that point to email the teacher and say, hey, here's what's going on. And here's some links. And I think he's well within his constitutional rights to sit out the pledge. And she emailed back and said, oh, my gosh, I had no idea this was something that was like official. And hey, he has every right to do this. And she supported him. So,
oh, okay.
Had any problem with the school yet, but I am a little worried that if I am pushed at some point to defend one of my children in the school system, that I might hit the news. And then I don't know how the heck I keep that out of my professional life at that point, but I will stand up for my kids, you know?
Yeah, of course. Oh man, that's very interesting. I definitely keep me posted if anything.
Oh yeah, happens, if anything happens, it's interesting. I'll let you know.
That's awesome. So next question, who's your favorite atheist public figure?
I thought about this and Marcel has me covered on, cause you've already been chosen.
So I can't be picked again. That's just kind of, you know, better pick a real public figure.
After Marcel is free to choose somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking about it. I have a hard time narrowing it down. I'm a huge fan of Hitchens. I listen to about 16 hours of podcasts every week because I travel for a little in the car time. So I am huge fans of Noah and Heath and Tom and Cecil and Dillahunty and company and Seth Andrews. So, I mean, there's so many. I love the podcasters because I think this is kind of the wave of the future in terms of communication and how the next generation will pick up on the movement and run with it, hopefully.
Yeah, no, you covered all a lot of the big ones there. That's awesome. Do you have a favorite book related to atheism?
I'm not a huge reader. I do most of my reading through audio for obvious reasons, but God Is Not Great. That's probably my favorite of all of them. I've read, I'm not going to be able to think of it. It was about kids in the schools.
I can't
think of the author's name.
Huh.
He's the head of, isn't he the head of Foundation Beyond Belief now?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm drawing a blank.
There you go. Pop quiz. Who's
the yeah, name? I don't know. I'm not.
Well, whatever. He wrote a book, and it's about kids in the schools. Hemet Mehta is another fan of mine. He also wrote a book about kids in the schools, but it was raising atheist kids, essentially, or raising non-believers, parenting beyond belief.
Hemet, a fan of yours, or did you mean to say you're a fan of his?
Well, I'm sure he'd be a fan of me if he knew.
If he knew, no. Okay, yeah, yeah. I was just wondering if he's noticed your work and having your kids not.
I quietly trying to fly under the radar work. Yeah.
Exactly, that'd be kind of interesting. And then how did you come across my show? I'm guessing could be through Tom and Cecil, could be through Noah. We got a lot of candidates here.
Yeah, you are the now tied for the most appearances on Scathing Atheist, if I recall correctly.
Oh, yeah, not counting Eli. I think Eli definitely now has way more appearances than I do. But yeah, awesome. Cool. I didn't know I was still going.
Yeah, I honestly don't remember where I picked up on you, but I started out with T and the B, and then when you started this, I have to admit I like this one better, but you are my moderate influence in atheism, but I kind of lean towards the Dillahunty, Noah, yeah. Tom and Cecil approach towards pointing and laughing. I do that quietly.
Yeah. Awesome. And finally, is there any message or anything you'd like to say, to the audience?
Sure, sure. Yeah. I mean, given politics and what is very possibly going to happen in the next presidential election and thus with the Supreme Court, I guess the best thing I can say is, keep it up. Dare I say, keep the faith, keep pushing. Forward, the future can be brighter. We just have to keep working at it and stick together and support each other, and we will make it a better country eventually. Just keep at it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. That was great.
Excellent. I really enjoy your show, and I enjoy being a Patreon.
Awesome. I can't thank you enough. So definitely keep me posted, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Thomas.
Okay, well, that just about does it for this episode. Couple of little things. First off, Comedy Shoeshine is on iTunes, so just go to iTunes and search Comedy Shoeshine. Check it out. Review it. It's very funny. I'm having a really good time with it, and I hope you guys will check it out on the Facebook and all the associated things. Also, thank you for being patrons, you. I have new patrons to thank. And I'm going to think, too. I'm going to think them. Yeah, I forget when I last did this, but let's just go with Eric Mac Davis, Jeremy A. Christian. I may have announced you guys already. I think I did. Eric, Justin Wilder, who pledged pie dollars. I'm pretty excited about that. Someone pledge E. Wait, how much is E? What is E? Is it like two? Man, I can't remember now. Someone pledge E dollars so I can remember how much it is. Although it's not, I better think of a better constant, huh? Like one that's really high or something. Daniel A., Thane Warner, Evan, and Robert Smiles. Thank you guys for being new patrons. I really appreciate it. You patrons really make the show go round. It would not survive. If I had no patrons, the show would no longer live. So thank you so much. Now I got to thank my top patrons, Adrian, Jonathan Moye, and Adrian Borschoff. I'll say it because he gave me the pronunciation. Jonathan Moye, Havard S., and Bangs Naughty Bits, as well as Michael, Peter Skelton, Katie Quiznos, Brian Garifort, Dale, Cincy Farmer, Jeremy Sharp, Jim, and Matt Garrett. Thank you guys so much. I'm blown away by your generosity, and the show, like I just said, would not happen without you. Also, I'm really enjoying the Patreon of the week, and I actually think it's a hit because I'm hearing a lot about it. I'm really enjoying it, and some people are saying, "Can I get in on it?" And yes, the answer to that is yes, absolutely. The last one or two, I forget what one we're on now, but have been people asking if they want to be on, which is great. I was gonna just pick people, and I will. I'll pick and get into contact with people, but. If people want to come on, then I'll go, first come, first served. And I think we've got a few, so get in quickly if you want to request to be the patron of the week. I have no problem with it. Eventually I'll run out, so I got to cover everybody. I'll have to start repeating. But hopefully that'll take a year or something. I don't know. We'll see. So yeah, just send me a message or something if you want to be on. I'm really enjoying it, especially if you think you have a interesting story or semi, unique part of your atheist experience. Not the show, but your atheist experience. So I'm really enjoying that. And I think that's it. I think I've covered it all for the week. So have a good week, and I will see you guys bright and early on Monday morn. Bye.